Hey, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And if you want a good book, the next one is incredible. I am so, so very happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Lucy and Antek Johnson. Lucy Antek Johnson is, she has taken a wonderful book that was out of print and brought it back to life. And I am so thrilled because for every music lover and historian, just to have this book in your collection is a treat. It is called This Was Toscanini, The Maestro, My Father, and Me. And it was written originally by her father, Samuel Antek, a brilliant, brilliant violinist and a wonderful man who really cared about children and bringing music to children, which is one of the reasons that I really admire him. And now Lucy is doing this for a new generation of people. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Great. Okay. Well, you know, of course, I love music. My kids were musicians, so it was always important to us to listen to music. And to have this book, which is so beautifully written by your father, you have to tell us first about your father, because everybody's heard Toscanini. They know his name. They know he's, I think, probably the greatest conductor of all times. But your father also was a great conductor, and what I love about him is that he brought, really, concerts to young people.
Yes, and what's interesting is that the theme music you were playing, which is Leroy Anderson, was one of the pieces he used to perform for the children's concerts in the New Jersey Symphony.
I know that. Because
I'm very familiar when your program opened.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that because,
thank you.
You know, your father, just in himself, was a wonderful, wonderful human being. And he wrote this very personal, beautiful book about Toscanini in a personal way that brings Toscanini really to life that I don't think anybody else has ever captured. So let's go back and talk about your father, of course, was selected to be the first violinist in the special, very, very special orchestra that was created for Toscanini at NBC.
Yes, it was in 1937, and all the players were handpicked as an elite group for this new orchestra, because Arturo Toscanini was moving to America to inaugurate this new symphony for the NBC radio network, and it would be a jewel in the crown for their schedule as well as for their recording division, of course. So it was very high profile, and just to say that Toscanini at the time was 70 and at the pinnacle of his career. And I guess by modern standards, you'd say he's a rock star because he was so, so famous. He was even called at some point the most famous man in the world. So for my father, who was also a virtuoso violinist who had been giving solo concerts, and to be chosen, it was quite a privilege and quite an honor. And then the orchestra lasted for 17 years until Toscanini retired at 87. And my dad was part of that orchestra throughout all of those 17 years. And my dad was not only a great violinist and also became a very prominent conductor with major orchestras around the country, but he was a very good writer. And that his words can be printed once again and read by new generations means so much to me, because he really captures what it was like to be in the process of creating pieces with Toscanini. And he takes you inside as though you're sitting in the orchestra learning like you're invited into a master class with an artistic genius. You know, what was Toscanini's approach to a score? What was his how did he tried to respect the composer's intentions, what was his conducting styles, and of course his infamous mood. And my father captures all of that very personally, but very beautifully for both a musician to read and appreciate, and just a classical music fan to totally appreciate. You don't have to know music to appreciate this book.
No, the writing is really so great. It's the portrait is so intimate. As you said, you really feel like you're there with your father as he you know, gets excited about Toscanini. For any musician in the world to be able to work with Toscanini was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
And of course, Toscanini's... Toscanini's coming from Europe and to America, where he's going to make a tremendous impact at the age of 70. It's wonderful, really, when you think about it. Most people think, you're washed up at 70.
That's right. He was at the top of his game and had already made not only political headlines as a musician, but political headlines, because he had stood up against Hitler and Mussolini. And that was another reason why, sadly, he left Italy in 1937 and 38. It was a very sad moment for him to leave his home. But he was invited to start this endeavor, and he conducted around the world, and he kind of had to get out from the strict surveillance by the fascists at the time. So it was bittersweet for him to be leaving Italy and starting this exciting new chapter in his life. And it was a new chapter for my father's life. Along the way, my dad had always wanted to conduct as well. And with the support and encouragement of the maestro, my dad was able to become a conductor in his own right, and his first major assignment was as musical director of the New Jersey Symphony. And it was at the New Jersey Symphony that his efforts were not only to bring wonderful programs to the audience, but to bring the music to the different communities, have more people involved in music, and especially children, and especially young people. And he started a series called Music for Fun. They were children's concerts, very interactive. And I got to say, they were a few years before Leonard Bernstein did it. And those children's concerts created such a response from other orchestras around the country that he was invited to guest conduct around the country, not just for adults, but for these children's concerts as well.
Well, I think about how Toscanini's influence on America was enormous. Because of him, really, film music changed, I think. It became bigger and broader, and people were able to, do music that perhaps before they had thought they couldn't do. But if Toscanini played it on NBC, and right, people all across the country, in my own area of, where I was born in northern Michigan, everybody up there in those days, they were listening to Toscanini. They were listening to NBC. And he brought this music to them that they would never have heard, probably. And so we always have to be very grateful to NBC for this wonderful thing that they did to open people's, just to give this kind of joy of listening to these broadcasts.
Well, and also in 1950, they made a cross-country tour. I don't know remember whether they might have stopped in your town or not, but they stopped in 20 cities and just filled arenas and huge concert halls, and movie theaters were closed and turned over into concert halls when the NBC Symphony came into their town. And it was joyous. It was truly a triumph, and it was joyous. And years before, they had made, as a symphony with Toscanini, a tour to South America. And that was in 1940, which Europe was already in the war. So that had a whole different tone to it when they went into South America. But everywhere he went, the audience, sometimes the ovations would go on for 15 minutes, because he was so dynamic to look at. The music was so dynamic to listen to. And they were not used to or had yet to ever see him on television. So this was such an opportunity when he came in person to play. And the records are still available. They've remastered many of them, and they're still available, whether it's YouTube or Spotify or Amazon or, you know, however you want to get them. And they're wonderful to listen to, and there are some YouTube videos of concerts that are just, I get a little teary every time I look at them, because you can feel his passion. You can feel Toscanini's passion for the music, because his life was about music.
About music. And the unbelievable thing when you think about it, that people, you know, as a young man, the people he worked with, wow.
Well, he was friends with Verdi.
Oh, wow.
Think of it.
It gives you tingles when you think about it.
He played cello. Toscanini was a cellist by original profession. And he played cello when Verdi conducted the opening night of Otello, the opera Otello. Now, you just have to wrap your mind around that for a moment. And also, he was friendly, if that's the way to put it, with Puccini. And we think of them as some, you know, icons of a very bygone, distant era, even though we're all playing his operas today. They're in every repertoire today. But here was Toscanini bridging that whole century, because he was the principal conductor at La Scala when he was 25 years old. He was quite an exceptional musician and man, actually. He was a humanitarian as well.
Oh, it really does give you tingles when you think about it. I mean, just sort of removed. Now I've spoken to you, and of course you know, so it's that connection all the way back to Puccini, like La Boheme. Wow, you know, it's just so exciting to think about.
It is, and when, as my father would tell the stories, when Toscanini would talk. You know, he was very congenial off stage. He was very tough in rehearsals. He was a taskmaster. He was, you know, impassioned about how to interpret the music, and he was very, very stern. And he loved to pepper in his Italian curses every so often. But when he was talking, socially, because he was a very social person, he would tell Verdi stories, and you're listening. He didn't tell them to me, but he told them to the players. And you just have to wrap your head around the fact that these names, that these talents were part of his whole history that he was bringing forth to whatever project he was involved in.
Well, I love how your father writes about the fact that Toscanini had stage fright. You never think of that when you see, you know, well, when you look at the old, the YouTube concerts, you never think of him as being, you know, having any stage fright, that he just gets out there but it was very intimate the way that your father wrote about what it meant to hear from Toscanini himself about how he felt about going out on stage.
And also, when they were doing live concerts, because they were live broadcasts, I don't mean live in a theater. I mean live on the radio every Saturday night, and or recording sessions. There was something very, for him and for a lot of people, very intimidating about the fact that you cannot get anything wrong. This is live. This is this is being recorded, or we're making a record. And once we all say yes to the music that we've created that day, this is it for posterity. And there was something very inhibiting for him about that. When he played in a concert hall, like on these tours, he was so relaxed, and he was very different, so my father described, of how much he enjoyed, I suppose, the freedom of not because it wasn't a live broadcast, and it wasn't timed exactly, and it, you know, there was that was a little more, in his mind, creative freedom. So he was much more relaxed in person performing than when he had to do recording.
When it must have been so intimidating to be a musician under him, because he didn't miss anything.
Nothing. And he had terrible eyesight, and he would have to bring the score, if he was referring to the score, very close to his eyes, so you'd think, oh, he's not going to see what's 30 feet away. He saw everything. He saw the nod of a head. He saw he saw everything, and he would call you out for it. He didn't miss a beat, but he could be a little frightening, because he would throw these very earthy Italian phrases at the players. But they realized that it wasn't anger, and it wasn't being mean. It was his rage. His personal rage to master. It was his rage at wanting to do the best for this composer and to interpret it. Because a conductor's creative contribution is in the interpretation. Like a director in a play or a painter who's trying to figure out the composition on the page and how light is something, how dark should something be. The same with a conductor. How loud is forte? How soft is pianissimo? That's up to the conductor's interpretation. What you see in the concert, you say, oh, he's beating time or he's cueing somebody. Well, it's the hours of rehearsal that went into that moment. Sometimes the men were a little frightened, but they so respected him and they loved him, and they loved that he was so passionate about the music. And they also felt, and my father says this a few times throughout the book, that they as musicians became better musicians because of Toscanini's passionate and sometimes wrathful approach to how to reach the right sound, the right moment.
Well, you'd have to be as a musician, because he could hear, you know, listening to everybody. It's amazing what any conductor can do, but particularly him. He can hear one little wrong note. And I love how your father writes that he said to the musician, sing, sing.
Cantare, sostenere, sing, sustain. Yeah, that was his battle cry. And he in fact would sing along, obviously in rehearsal, but sing along because he was so impassioned by what he was doing, which was a great gift, and a great gift for the players who got the opportunity to work with him, because you couldn't slough off, and you didn't want to, you know. And part of what I was able to do in my newly written intros to that wrap around each of my dad's original chapters was to highlight the impact that Toscanini had on our family, and to shine a little more light on my dad's career and who he was, because he in his book, even though it's written in first person, he doesn't talk much about himself. It's always in reference to something with the orchestra. And I thought, you know, it's time that he'd be a little more center stage himself. He had a wonderful career. He sadly died very young, just at the peak of his career. He was only 49. I was only 12, so it was quite a shock to the family and to the musical world. And so I wanted to honor him, not just by having this book reissued, but writing more about him. And his relationship to the maestro. So
adding a great deal of depth and sensitivity. And, of course, we have to mention your mother and what she did to, you know, must have been just so terrible to lose this wonderful husband at such a young age. And then she has to, you know, take off and do something with her life. But meanwhile, she's working on this book, because it came out many years after he had passed away, and he never got to know that the reception for this book was tremendous.
tremendous. It really, really made a huge impact because it was the first of all, in those days, in the 50s, Toscanini died in 57 at almost 90. In those days, in the few years after, because he was so famous and so important as a musician, there was such interest in him, and that this book told from a player's perspective, a full-length narrative told from a player's perspective about the behind-the-scenes, what it took to make these memorable concerts, had an extra impact at the time because he was still so fresh in people's minds. And when my dad died, he had yet to have completed the book. And we'll never know, was he going to write a long chapter? Was he going to write a short essay? There's no record of his notes. And it took my mother a couple of years to even want to deal with it. But then she said, you know, we must publish this. This was his work of a lifetime. And she had worked with him on it and helped him edit and typed, and I did my little part. But she said, no, let it all be in his words. I don't want to write anything trying to imagine what he would have written. And that's how it got published. And she joined forces with Robert Hupka, who was the photographer that takes these incredible portraits. They're candid portraits of Toscanini in rehearsal. And both the marriage of the portraits and my father's text is what the book is. When I came along now and started to do a little more research, and I went into my father's notes that I hadn't looked at. I didn't even know some of them existed, and I went through boxes, and I found his handwritten notes that had never been published about the last concert and how sad it was, that last concert. It was always planned to be the final NBC performance, but not necessarily the last performance of Toscanini. Well, what happened in the middle of the concert is Toscanini, probably having had a little stroke, I don't know, stopped playing. He just stopped. It was in the middle of Wagner, Tannhauser, I believe, and the orchestra was totally confused. The audience at home didn't quite know what happened. They yanked the broadcast off the air. The studio audience was completely baffled. But within a few minutes, Toscanini rallied and continued and finished the program. But my father writes his description of what it was like when Toscanini walked off the stage and how dazed and confused he was and how the baton dropped on the floor as he walked out, and that it was really going to be the final performance of his anywhere.
Well,
and that's what I include in one of my pieces, because I'm not saying this is what Dad would have written, but it was already in note form, and maybe it was something he would have written. And I think it's also an appropriate conclusion for a reader of this edition.
Well, I think so too. It was wonderful that you included it. Your father, of course, was a prodigy, and I just what I really love is I love the pictures of your father. You know, when he was a young boy, and it was this concert that an eminent Russian violin pedagogue presented, Grisha Boroshek, and
right.
And this photo of your dad as a young boy, and
Sammy, they called it.
Yes,
Chicago.
It's so cute, and of course the tickets at that time were 50 cents. Well, but it's beautiful that you've included all of this extra stuff in the book that just makes it, you know, fills in the whole story about a wonderful man, Toscanini. Of course, we have to always remember that he was so strongly outspoken against fascism, and that
absolutely, it's a very, very, very big part of his humanity and the person that he was, and he was under attack. He got beaten up quite a few times by the fascist mob, but he was still protected, oddly protected by Mussolini, who knew he was, who knew that Toscanini was a national treasure. So he didn't want too much bad to befall him. And when Toscanini left Italy to move to America, I don't think that made Mussolini very happy. But in 43, and Toscanini had said, "I will never play in Italy again until the fascists fall." And in 43, the regime was over. And he didn't rush back to Italy right away, but what he did is he put together a concert in America based on Verdi's Hymn of Nations. And it was a thank you to all the allies. And it's also on YouTube. And it's very, very powerful and moving and worth a half hour of someone's time to find it on YouTube. And because it was a labor of love for Toscanini to be able to kind of welcome Italy back and thank the allies with Jan Pierce singing. It's quite...
It is very moving. And exactly, people should... check that out, and they should also go to your website, because you have a beautiful website that has more details and more photos, and just give your website.
It's the thiswastoscanini.com, very much like the title.
Okay, everybody, really check this out. It's called This Was Toscanini, and the book is... the subtitle is The Maestro, My Father, and Me. And it's a book, of course, originally written by Samuel Antic. And now Lucy Antic Johnson, I didn't get a chance to talk about all your great accomplishments. Of course, you have been, you know, involved in so many wonderful projects yourself. But this project of bringing this book back to life for everybody and making it available, it is a wonderful book, perfect book for a gift, perfect book for anybody who's writing about that period of time, somewhere, you know, Toscanini's influence touched so many things across America, across the world. And it's a wonderful book, beautifully, beautifully done by your father and by you. And I want to really thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And everybody, really think about getting this book as a gift. And then one for you know, there are so many people who are music lovers. If you know any music lovers, give this as it's a perfect gift. And then, of course, you'll want to keep one right there on your coffee table, because it's just a gorgeous book.
Well, thank you for that endorsement. I really appreciate it. You know, you work on something by yourself for so long, and then you let it out into the world, and you just, fingers crossed that people... they get what you've done, and you've put it so beautifully, Patsy. I really appreciate it.
Well, I will continue to promote this book, because many of the people who are, you know, are on my program, the writers, and they always ask me, well, what, you know, where, how do you do research? How do you make your books better? What kind of research should you do? And I always say, read really great books about famous people, because it really gives you depth in when you're writing a book. If you have all of this background information, you never know when you're going to use it. And so this book is particularly wonderful. As I said, it goes across America. When you think about, you know, you could be writing a story, as I said, about Michigan, a small place in Michigan, and Toscanini came through, you know? It changes people's lives, and so many people became... you know, took up music, wanted to learn music, wanted to take classes, wanted to become musicians because of his influence, and then later on your father, on young children. And I wish we had somebody like that today. I wish we had somebody like your dad, because we don't have really anybody right now who's out there saying, hey, people, get your kids off of these electronic devices and give them some piano lessons, violin lessons.
And look what's happened to the arts programs in the schools.
Oh, it's disgusting.
That's extracurricular activity.
It's disgusting.
It's so sad. It's so sad. I was very fortunate. I went to a high school in New York, High School of Music and Art. I majored in art, but one could major in music.
But
There aren't many of those schools around.
No, and I really wish somebody would bring it back. I wish somebody like your father, who had a wonderful personality himself, could start influencing parents to give their children music lessons. Because, like during this whole pandemic year, if you can play the piano, if you can play the violin, you've got something to do. You know, you're a better and you're a better person. Your mind is better. So I think that your father, Samuel Antek, was really ahead of his time, and I wish we had more of him.
Well, thank you, Patsy. I do too.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. As I said, I'll continue to promote this book. And again, the website is This Was Toscanini. And find out more about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now, Lucy. Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Okay, we'll do a quick commercial, and then I will have my next guest.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with a very special guest, and I am looking at her photo right now. And you know, the name of this program is Joy. Joy on paper. Well, if you saw the photograph of Vanessa J. Coleman, you would say, that is a face of joy. It is a beautiful face, and I just love looking at her. And I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Vanessa J. Coleman, and the name of her book is The Fourth Watch. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
Wow. How are you doing? You're excited? You have a book signing coming up?
Yes. The book signing is on Saturday, August the 28th, at the Clarion Inn and Suites in Clearwater, Florida. And I am very, very excited about that.
Wow. So tell us about your journey and how you wrote this book, and what was the lesson that you want people to get out of this book?
I have since September the 1st, 2006, I began a journey that took me from Clearwater, Florida, to Jacksonville for a year and a half, to Maryland, D.C. for 10, and to Texas for 2. And then back to Clearwater, where it all started. And, I'm in Jacksonville currently now. But this journey took me from what was comfortable and familiar to me to meeting people, going to places that I've I wouldn't have gone if I hadn't have taken a leap of faith to say, you know what, I want to see what's beyond, you know, what I see. And so that journey took me to those places. And while in Texas, waiting on, I call what our life is a journey, and that we're assigned, God has assigned us to different things to accomplish on our journey. And this was a part of my journey to, you know, to find who I was, to find out, you know, my strengths, my weaknesses, find out who I was, and I'm still becoming. I'm still not arrived. I'm still becoming. But while in Texas, I was waiting on my next assignment. What now? What now? I felt like I knew I was. I've come to a place where I was okay. All right, you're hearing clearly now. You're not just wishy-washy up and down. And then God, I just heard the Spirit say, start this ministry of prayer called Kai, calling all intercessors. And Kai was, I go to different cities and do what I call a gathering. And we pray for the spiritual climate in the different cities around wherever I get an invite. And so I started doing that, and I was doing that faithfully. And the Lord said, well, take those prayers and put them in a book. I kid you not, I have a binder that's about 3-4 inches thick, a binder of prayers. that prayer focus comes with, the book was written because the fourth watch represent that time of night from between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. So I get up at 3 a.m. in the morning, and I get dressed, and I go live on Facebook, and I share a focus. He may give me something with families, a different focus, unplanned detour, repentance, just different things, that relationship, just different things, process, just different things that we live every day. And he said to put it in a book, and that's where this fourth watch comes from. The time of morning, 3 a.m. in the morning, when everybody else is sleeping, and I'm up praying. And he took those prayers, and we put it in this book called The Fourth Watch.
Wow. That's ambitious, to get up at 3 in the morning and do this. You know, it really does, it means you really are inspired.
Yes, ma'am.
So what do you find? Are you hopeful for everything that, you know, the world is in many ways a mess right now? But have you found reaching out to people, the goodness of humanity?
Yes. You know what? We have to be careful with, I think we have to be careful with, you know, labeling situations based on what we see externally. Because there's always a hidden thing behind what we see. We are these beings. We are natural beings, but you know, we're of this world, but not of this world. But we're thinking, basically with the mind that people are inwardly, because that's God's creation, and everything that He created was good. So now one or two or three or four or maybe five or six may not be. I mean, we see we see what our society is now. We see what is going on now. But I have to live as though I've never been hurt before. And I have to live as though I'm representing God here in the earth realm. And I must feel, despite I may have been lied on, cheated on, stepped on, spit on. But the whole my response to all of that is what's going to be eternal. My response to how I respond to the ugliness, to the, you know, the dysfunction that's in our society right now. Because we, you know, it's like, oh man, is there anybody praying? Yes, there are people praying. They're praying for humanity. They're praying for the love of God to be shed abroad here. But it takes you and I and all of us doing our part to bring this thing together. Now, I might not be able to reach everyone, but I'm not called to everyone. There's something for you. There's something for me. There's something for all of us to do to help this thing to bring the people, all people, back to that place of that place of innocence, because we've lost that place of innocence.
Exactly. That's what I've been thinking about all through this year, that when we put together a room full of babies, and they're all innocent, and they all have such potential.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful to see. If you've ever worked, like I have, you know, volunteered at nurseries and at church, Sunday church schools, and you see them so innocent and so just so delightful. And then what happens along the way? And we have to start looking for that innocence and reaching back into ourselves and saying, we have to help people just find a joy and find this forgiveness, but also find a way forward.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that I've been focusing on the past couple of weeks, this month, was we can't move forward if we're sitting down. I mean, you're not moving if you're sitting down. You have to move forward, and in order to see the manifestation of any kind of change. Because if not, then we'll find ourselves repeating cycles over and over. We'll find ourselves in the same next year. This time, we'll be in the same place.
Exactly. Now, and of course, you decided to write a book, which is, you know, that's always a very brave thing, to write the book, to put it down on paper, and then to get out there and expose yourself to, you know, to all of the people out there and say, here, you know, get this book. I hope that it will help you. And I think it's a book of inspiration. And well, how did you feel when you finished the book and saw it first time?
Oh, my goodness. I was so elated. It was just an experience that it's hard to describe that you put something together. You took the time to put it in writing, and that somebody wants to read somebody wants to read something that you wrote. It's humbling. It's a very humbling place. I'm very thankful for all of the support, all of the good, the bad, the ugly, the indifference, all of that stuff, because all of that stuff makes up our journey. We can't just say, well, I don't want this part here, but I want that part. I want all the good part. I'll tell you about the good part, but I don't want to talk about the bad part. But all of that made up who we are. That's who. You know, I wouldn't be the woman that I am. I wouldn't be the mother. I wouldn't be the friend. I wouldn't be the servant of God that I am if it had not been for all of the experiences that I've lived.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you've written the book. I'm sure that your family and friends are excited for you. And to have a book signing is always exciting for an author. So, again, tell people where they can find you. You're on Facebook. What's your Facebook?
Ma'am. My Facebook is Vanessa J. Coleman.
Okay, and are you on Twitter? Do you have a website?
I don't have a Twitter account, but I do. My website is still being worked on, but it's going to be Calling All Intercessors. That will be the platform that I, go through kind of upload my 3 a.m. prayers and all of that stuff that I do outside of all the other stuff that I do. But that will be, Calling Out Intercessors will be the website.
Okay, well, you've certainly started, you started on an exciting journey, and you've just making it into a really fabulous experience and one that you can share with people. Again, the name of the book is The Fourth Watch, and people can come out and see you at the Clarion Inn and Suite, which is on US 19, and it's going to be Saturday, August 28th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, Vanessa, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. You are a joy. As I said, just seeing your big smile, I got such a, you know, I looking at your flyer and looking at your book, and I think, you know, this is wonderful when people, that's what I always tell people, you have a book in you. And I have a feeling, Vanessa, now that you've started, you're going to be writing more books.
Oh, yes, yes. There's two more that I'm working on now.
Okay. Well, next time I'll have you here in the studio. I didn't have enough time this week to get you in, but next time you'll come in the studio and we'll talk about all of your books, okay?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I appreciate you, Ms. Fassi.
Okay.
Thank you again for this time.
Okay. Well, thank you. And again, everybody, the Clarion Inn and Suite, Saturday, August 28th at from 4 to 7 p.m., and get out there and meet Vanessa and get one of her books and get inspired. Maybe, you know, you will hear Vanessa's story and you will say, yeah, you know, I have a book in me too. Bye-bye now, Vanessa.
All right.
Okay. All right. We have time for my book buzz, right? Rita Moreau's book buzz. Let's play that one. And because Rita Moreau is going to be, no, well, not Rita Moreau is not going to be here, but next week, Carol J. Perry will be right here in the studio with me, and we will be talking about her wonderful new series. But here's the book buzz for it.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Be My Ghost, a Haunted Haven mystery book number one by Kensington author Carol J. Perry. Newsflash! Be My Ghost has been named 15 of the best upcoming cozy mysteries for the second half of 2021. Wowzer! Okay, here's the buzz. Maureen and her golden retriever, Finn, have taken possession of a charming old inn, only to discover that it's already possessed by tenants whose lease on life already ran out. Maureen's career as a sportswear buyer hits a snag just before Halloween when the department store declares bankruptcy. Meanwhile, Finn's lost his way as a guide dog after flunking his test for being too friendly and easily distracted. Sadly, only one of them can earn unemployment. So Maureen's facing a winter of discontent in Boston when she realizes she can't afford her apartment. Salvation comes when she receives a mysterious inheritance, an inn in Haven, Florida, a quaint scenic town on the Gulf of Mexico, hidden away from the theme parks. Maureen believes it's a good place to make a fresh start with a new business venture. But she gets more than she's bargained for when she finds a dead body on her property and meets some of the inn's everlasting tenants in the form of ghosts who offer their otherworldly talents in order to help her solve the mystery. Be My Ghost, a Haunted Haven mystery book number one by fabulous Kensington author Carol J. Perry. It releases August 31st, but it's available now for pre-order on Amazon. Can't wait? Hey, check out Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mystery Series. There's 11 books and counting. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's Radio-Joy on Paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
As I said, Carol J. Perry will be here in the studio next Tuesday. Meanwhile, you can go to her website, which is Carol J. Perry, and she has an events page there, and she has a lot of events coming up because this is a big, big, big release for a new series. And, of course, she is a Kensington author, and Kensington, when they pull out the stops, all stops. They really do a great job, and they have her really going around the country via Zoom, talking to so many people about this wonderful new series. And right now, Carol she's just returned from a major trip up north. She went to Salem, where she was born on Halloween Eve, and that's how she was she inspired to write her first series, which, of course, is Witch City Mysteries. And I'm looking forward to having a lot of photos from that event when she went up there for a little, you know, visit back to hometown. And so those also will be on her webpage. But, you know, it's just been so exciting. Carol was the first guest in the studio with me. And so it's been an exciting adventure to watch as she's developed over the years. It's now 6.5 years since I started Joy on Paper. And when I started, she was on book one. And this shows you what you can do. If you are a determined author and you want to write and you want to get out there and get your book seen, all you have to do is be disciplined. And boy, oh boy, Carol J. Perry is. And as Rita mentioned, we now have Carol's new series, but she's already written 11 in her Witch City Mystery series. And speaking of Rita Moreau has her own books out, and a wonderful, wonderful kooky mystery. She calls them kooky mysteries because we will say that, Rita's just a little bit kooky, but that's why she writes so nicely about a wonderful characters that she's developed for her. You know, when sometimes an author will just come out with a character, and her main character is Mabel Gold, who is trekking around the country, driving a F-150 and towing a camper. And she has an unexpected guest, a ghostly version. So, again, these books by Rita Moreau are lots of fun. And speaking of the two of them together, on October 20th, mark your calendar, they're going to have an event, and we're going to be really talking a lot about that because it's a local event. It's, you know, finally not a Zoom event, and they'll get together and talk about cozy mysteries, and particularly about, let's say, books with a little paranormal in them, and it's exciting because, listen, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or, if you're very lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know if you don't start writing. So start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Oh, he looks so nice in a bright red shirt. Aha! And he saluted me, and I saluted him. Everybody, take care, and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now.